Okay, so thank you for the introduction, and thank you, Christian, for this opportunity. And of course, happy belated birthday, Eric. As the title of my talk says, I'm going to talk about regularity of solutions of degenerate quasi-linear equations. And here's a little outline. I'm going to introduce quasi-linear elliptic equations, the problems that people study in connection to those, and in particular the questions of regularity of solutions. And in particular, I'm going to talk about one approach that uses subunit metrics of Pfefferman and Fong, and the extension of result of Pfefferman and Fong to rough vector fields done by Eric Sorin, Richard Witten, and our work on the extension of that result to infinitely degenerate situations. And of course, I'm going to give some references in the end. So here's our quasi-linear equation of divergence form. Operator L applied to U equals the divergence of A grad U, and this is these are lower order terms, and I guess from now on I'm going to forget about them because this is the main part here. Matrix A depends on X and U. This is why it's quasi-linear, because we have a function U right there. And we always assume that A is C infinity of its argument, and it's non-negative semi-definite also. Our original motivation to study in those equations comes from the Monge-Ampère equation, and it has been mentioned today already, the real one, the fully nonlinear equation, which arises in many applied areas, differential geometry of surfaces, and so on. And there's a very powerful tool, a so-called partial Lejeune transform that takes the fully nonlinear Monge-Ampère equation to a quasi-linear equation. Well, in n dimensions, it's actually a system. And by studying regularity of solutions of quasi-linear equations, we can then draw conclusions about the regularity of solutions to Monge-Ampère equations. And this is how we got into studying those ones. So some important notions connected to the regularity of solutions. Well, first, and here is our operator L again. So ellipticity. If we have ellipticity, then pretty much everything is known. Well, a lot is known. In particular, we know that if our operator is sub-elliptic, elliptic, then we get a sub-elliptic estimate. The solution is Hodder continuous, and this is the bound. But the class of sub-elliptic operators is wider, and the natural question is, can we characterize this class, or can we say that one operator is sub-elliptic by looking at its coefficients or something like that? And yet wider class is the class of hyperelliptic operators. When if we know that L applied to U is C infinity, then we can say that U is C infinity. And hyperellipticity is weaker than sublipticity. So again, it's yet a wider class of operators, and the same questions can be asked. Can we characterize, or can we answer the question if a particular operator is hyperelliptic or not? So since we study the regularity of solutions of quasi-linear and degenerate equations, the main two difficulties that we have is the nonlinearity and degeneracy. So nonlinearity is that our metric depends on the function U, and one approach to dealing with it is to plug the function U of X and forget about this dependence. But then this new matrix A tilde A of X becomes as rough as U of X a priori is. But this is one way to study this quasi-linear problems, and well, we're following that way too. And the second problem is the degeneracy, that when we lose ellipticity, the determinant of A can become zero at some point, and then we don't have all the nice elliptic theory. And the degeneracy can be of, well, we can characterize it in two types. Finite degeneracy is like polynomially vanishing, and infinite degeneracy is like the basic example is e to the minus 1 over x squared. We can differentiate that as many times as we like, it's still 0, 0. So, and this is the case that we're looking at, the infinite degeneracy case. So I'm going to say it right away. Okay, so here's a little chart of some results or partial results. I'm just going to mention three of those. Here we have the degeneracy that we can have a non-degenerate or elliptic equation. We can have finite degeneracy when the coefficients vanish as a polynomial or something close, and infinite degeneracy. And non-linearity, we only look at linear and quasi-linear cases. So for finitely degenerate case, well, I shouldn't say, for linear case, there is a characterization of sub-elliptic operators by Pfefferman and Fong. The paper published in 1981 in terms of sub-unit metrics. And in particular, this characterization tells us that if we have infinite degeneracy, we don't have sub-elliptic, roughly speaking. So we cannot hope for that in the case of infinite degeneracy. Then for the case of quasi-linear equations, this is the extension of Eric Thor and Richard Witten that I'm going to talk about it. Not exactly to quasi-linear, but to rough coefficient that covers the quasi-linear case in particular. And they got sub-ellipticity under some assumptions. And here's the case that the worst case scenario, infinitely degenerate and quasi-linear equation that we're looking at. And as I said, we cannot hope for sub-ellipticity, but hyper-ellipticity is what we're trying to show. And actually, if we assume that the solution is continuous, this is a recent result by Christian Rias, Eric Thor, and Richard Witten, that we do get hyper-ellipticity. With some assumptions, of course, but the gap from weak solution to continuity is in particular what we're working on. So here's basically what I said in a little detail. For a finitely degenerate case, for linear operators, there's first, I didn't mention that, there was a Hermander's theorem in 1967. He showed sub-ellipticity in the case when the in terms of the vector fields associated to the operator, the vector fields and their commutators generate all Rn, that then you have sub-ellipticity. Then the Pfefferman-Fong characterization of sub-ellipticity, and this is a very nice result because it's a characterization, it's an if and only if condition, in 1981. And then the extension to rough vector fields by Thor and Witten in 2006. Also, sub-ellipticity, and as I said, this rough vector field covers the quasi-linear case. So this is just a quick reminder of subunit metrics and subunit balls that we're going to be using, and Richard Witten was talking about it yesterday, so I'm going to remind quickly. We want to introduce a subunit metric. For that, we need a subunit curve. It's a Lipschitz curve gamma, and its derivative connected to the operator, the metrics of our operator L in the following way. And I'm talking about linear case from now on, because we agreed that we're going to treat non-linearity by looking at rough coefficients. So from now on, A is linear. It only depends on X. So this is subunit curves, and then we introduce subunit metrics as the infimum of all the, well, you might call it time or length if your curve is arc length parameterized. But we only restrict of all the lengths of the curves connecting X and Y, but we're only looking at the subunit curves. And once we have this distance, we have a subunit ball. And this is how our ball is connected to the operator through that subunit condition. So So we have those balls, and two conditions play a very important role in the whole theory, is the doubling condition. So basically it says that the ratio of the measures, and the measures here are the Lebesgue measures, just the usual Lebesgue measures, that the ratio of the measures of two balls is controlled by the ratio of their radii to some power here, D is the doubling exponent, what we call that. And another important condition is the containment condition that says that in every subunit ball B, there is a Euclidean ball E. E is the notation for the Euclidean ball, and their radii are connected to that exponent E. So basically, it says that there is a Euclidean ball that is not too small in every subunit ball. So having all that, here's the Pfeffer-Monfon characterization of subellipticity of 1981. Operator L is subelliptic. This is what they mean by subelliptic. If and only if the following containment condition holds, the one that I just mentioned. So they give this characterization in terms of the subunit matrix and subunit ball. And as I said, this in particular says that in the case of infinite degeneracy, we don't have subellipticity. And here's the extension by Sorin Whitten to rough vector fields. Well, it's a version of it that we're looking at. So we're looking at operator L that only has bounded and measurable coefficients, which is really weak. And we assume doubling condition and containment condition that were just there, two conditions. Then we have a kind of a reverse containment condition that the subunit ball is inside some Euclidean ball. So they don't just explode. Then we also need some versions of Sobloff and Poincaré inequalities, some weak versions, and an accumulating sequence of cutoff functions, which Richard Whitten was talking about also. It's a technical thing. I'm not going to talk about it more. Then, if everything holds, then operator L is subelliptic. And it's pretty general. Then we can ask in a certain situation for a certain system of balls if any of that holds and so on. But again, here, the doubling condition and containment condition in particular don't allow for infinite degeneracy. So here it is. These are an example of the subunit balls in 2D. This is infinite degeneracy, therefore non-doubling. Basically, our balls collapse really quickly. We don't control it for any radius. But we don't allow them just to collapse to the line or anything like that because we don't get any regularity. In this case, we do have some kind of control in the sense that for any non-zero radius, there is a Euclidean ball inside, but it's just very small. It's not like a power of R. It's something else, some function of R that is non-zero for zero radius. So that's basically what we have. And here's what we expect. As I mentioned, assuming continuity of the weak solution, it's been shown by Riestor and Whitten that every weak continuous solution is smooth, basically the hyperellipticity. Well, there are assumptions, of course, but the idea is that. And then we want to show the continuity using the subunit metric approach and the subunit ball. So I'm just gonna go through some steps of the proof by Eric Sorin and Richard Whitten, and then say how we try and adapt that to show continuity and what problems we have. So basically, here it is. I forgot about lower order terms, just the main part. We have U that is a weak solution of our equation. This is what weak solution is. And basically what they do next is look at the equation that is satisfied by u bar to the beta, where u bar is the positive super solution, and then use weak sublef inequality for that u to the beta. And here's what weak sublef inequality tells us, that this L2 sigma norm of the function, where sigma is greater than 1, strictly greater than 1, is bounded by the following sum, the A gradient. A gradient is basically this thing here, and the L2 norm of the function. So then if you plug in the u to the beta for w, roughly speaking, then you do the Moser iteration against this power beta. And this is what, after some work, this is what you have, almost Harnack inequality, but the coefficient here is basically an A2 constant of u to the gamma. So what you do next is you show that u to the gamma is actually an A2 weight. And one way to do it is to show that log u is in BMO, then using John Nirbeck, you have that this is bounded by a constant. Then, from Harnack, you get almost Hölder continuity, the Hölder continuity with the distance, the subunit distance in place of the absolute value of x minus y. But then, if you have this containment condition that I mentioned, that in every subunit ball there is a Euclidean ball and the radii are connected through the power law, then you get the usual Hölder continuity. So this is a very rough idea, of course. But now, so if we got that, and the and we don't have the this containment condition, but remember I said we have some kind of containment condition. So so our distance would still go to zero when x goes to y. It just doesn't go like a power of x minus y. But that's enough for continuity. That's what we do. So the main problem arises from the absence of the doubling condition. And as I said, not infinite degeneracy means no doubling. Here's the example. So first problems arise with the Moser iteration when we have those volumes of the balls that accumulate. We can't just cancel them all and say that they are equivalent by doubling. But this is not the main problem. One of the main problems is when you arrive at the almost Harnack, this A2 constant there. Well, first of all, even if you show BMO for the log of the solution, since we don't get doubling, we don't have this connection between BMO and A2 because we don't get John Nirbeck. There is a substitution for the BMO for the non-doubling setting, the RBMO, regularized BMO space of Tulsa, and there is a hope to, if we show that the log use an RBMO, to get some version of John Nirbeck, some weak version, and get A2. And there are problems, of course, with Sublef and Poincaré, because our space is so bad. So for Sublef in particular, typically that sigma, that improvement, is d over d minus 2, where d is the doubling, which we don't have. But actually, just the other day, we were talking to Eric Sohr, and maybe there's another way to show that this is bounded, to show the Harnack, basically, without the BMO and John Nirbeck, just by showing some something like weak L1 for the log of the solution. So that is very encouraging. So, and here are the references that are used. I don't know. I probably don't have time to go through them anyway. And Thank you very much for your attention.